Hello and welcome to the Glow Journal podcast, a conversation with the beautiful minds behind the world's biggest beauty brands. I'm your host, beauty writer Gemma Diamond, and in this episode, I'm joined by the founder of Viviology, James Vivian. I find that when I connect with someone over a love of beauty, whether it's on this podcast or away from it, the thread or the through line always comes back to a feeling. I think it's that feeling that separates people who truly love this industry from the people who do tend to view it as solely superficial. And it's also the feeling that you get from James when you listen to or sit down with him. What drew James Vivian to beauty initially was how good a facial made him feel. And because he is so giving by his very nature, he wanted to be able to give that feeling to other people as well. He spent years studying beauty and the science of skin. He founded his own mobile facial business some 14 years ago. He later opened the first James Vivian Skin Clinic, which is now one of the most popular skin clinics in the country. And in 2022, he launched his own skincare brand, Viviology. James is so, so passionate about ensuring people feel welcomed into the beauty space and feel like they belong there. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to facilitate this conversation because I know the barrier to entry can sometimes feel really high, even as a consumer. But this conversation with James was a really beautiful reminder of what it's all about and why we all love beauty in the first place. It's about feeling good and hopefully helping others to feel the same. In this conversation, James shares how he's working to ensure everyone feels at home in his skin clinic, how he launched his own skincare brand with one of the country's biggest beauty retailers, and how he went from an Australian Idol finalist to one of Australia's most in-demand dermal therapists. I know that many, many moons ago, you made it to the top 100 of Australian Idol, but I want to start by winding the clock back even further. What is your very earliest memory of beauty?
I think it would have to be watching my mother's own skincare journey.
Yeah.
You know, I was quite tuned into that. My mother was quite glamorous back in the day, and she would disappear into this doorway just off Bay Street, Brighton, and go and see her woman, Rita, who she called the White Witch. I could never, ever go up there, but she would return later with a big bag of bottles and lotions and potions. And I do remember my mother loved a sample.
Yeah.
So I can imagine her up there being like, Rita, got any samples? And she would bring them all back into her bathroom and lots of different pots with like little stickers and inscriptions on there as to what they were.
It is witchy.
Yeah. It really was. I mean, I guess they had to really lean into that because back then skincare wasn't so active, right? So it was what you did with the skincare that was available to you that probably made more of a difference. Yeah. And so as soon as my mother would head out of the bathroom, like I'd be in there looking, touching, feeling, applying, which mum was never really into, probably because it cost a fortune.
Yeah.
But more so when that started to extend to her makeup and I'd play with her lippy and I'd play with her blush and, you know, mum would be like, James, have you been playing with my blush? And I'd be like, no, I haven't.
With a bright red face.
With a bright red face. But more so the fact that, you know, like blush is not a discreet kind of makeup.
It's,
you know, it
not.
Flies everywhere. What you get on your face, you get on the bench. So she never really embraced me playing with her stuff. Mm-hmm. But mum did buy me my first skincare little range when I started to get little hormonal breakouts when I was a teenager.
Classic.
And that was three-step tea tree leaf-based little routine, a cleanser, a spot treatment and a moisturizer. I remember it was in brown amber bottles.
Yeah.
But another memory, which is probably quite pertinent, was that we lived next door to a man called John.
Mm-hmm.
And John was the owner of, and you're probably too young for this, Gemma, but the owner of a quadruple X waxing salon on Chapel Street called Vanity.
Yeah, okay.
And so he studied beauty therapy and I was friends with his nephew and we would break into his house and we'd play in there because he was like a big kid. So we'd play with his computers and all of that. And I remember that I would see his Victoria University, like, anatomy and physiology textbooks and like facial photos and – not facial photos, but, like, you know, facial massage instructions and all of that. And funny story, like, John and my parents were arch nemesis.
Oh my God, I love this.
And so when I was about 15, I asked John for a Saturday job, just working in the salon. You know, I'd get the girls their lunches, I clean the wax off the floors. And I think John probably only gave me that job because it was a bit of like a F you to my parents.
I love this.
Who maybe still to this day don't actually ever knew that. Or still to this day, actually don't even know that I ever worked there.
Yeah.
But that
was
kind of like...
There's a Ryan Murphy show in this, one of those feud shows.
There was that was kind of like our little secret. So I'm sure that also had something to do with it as well.
Wow. Okay. So clearly an early affinity for beauty, but at that age, what did you want to grow up to be? Was it always music or was beauty something that was interesting to you professionally?
I think, like, back then I wasn't thinking about the future.
Yeah.
You know, I unfortunately didn't have a great time at school. School wasn't a safe place for me.
Yeah.
I came out when I was 16, when I first got a crush on a guy and got butterflies in my stomach and I was like, oh, I'm gay. You know, the world suddenly made sense to me.
Yeah.
But from about grade four, other people felt that they knew that. And so they weaponized that against me. And I was bullied and I had a really rough time at school. But music was very much a safe space for me. Or the music school was a really safe space for me. So I would spend a lot of time there. I'd do as many of those classes and additional lessons and private lessons and all of that as possible. And then I did a lot of extracurricular stuff. My father's also, you know, a pianist and a guitarist.
Wow.
There's a lot of music in our home. So when it came to kind of finishing school, I mean, I changed schools quite a few times and I've had a later in life diagnosis of ADHD. So that also makes a lot of sense in terms of why I struggle with a lot of other subjects
at
school too.
Game changer. Everyone I know that has found out later in life that they've got ADHD, it's a superpower once you like know how to deal with
it. It can be. It can be for sure. Quite confusing when you're a child and also when you're maybe not getting the support. But funny story, you know, when I went to see the psychiatrist, the first thing he said was, I need to see your school reports.
Yep, I've heard this as well. Yeah.
Which I've kept because I'm a bit of a hoarder. And so I had this very funny afternoon one day, like short of saying, you know, your child is like a little MF.
Yeah.
You know, it was you know, always the same, you know, disruptive to himself, to others, can't sit still, always touching himself, not touching himself, always fiddling, always moving around, you know, lots of potential, all that sort of stuff.
That's the one, lots of potential.
Which is probably really difficult to harness as a child.
Yeah.
But as an adult, you know, I'm very much in that sort of hyper-focused category of ADHD, which, as you say, it's a superpower.
Mm.
It's why I've got the business I have, why people are drawn to me or not drawn to me.
Sure.
You know, like it is what it is. Where were we going about that? So when it came to sort of finishing year 12, the only thing that I had any interest in or was really any good at was music. So
yeah,
it just made sense to continue on that with that journey.
So then where to from here? Did you study music after secondary school? What sort of path were you taking?
So I studied music for 4 years.
Amazing.
And I absolutely loved that time and I don't regret that at all. You know,
yeah.
It was very much me and a couple of hundred other kids just working together creatively, writing music, playing together, like being very debauched together. And I think that it's during this time that I really started to discover or flex my entrepreneurial muscles, you know, because I would put on these big gigs because I was always very ambitious.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be, you know, someone, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to share what I do with people. And so I'd put on these big performances and I'd get my friends to perform alongside. I'd invite agents to come and managers to come and we'd sell CDs. I actually brought one of my CDs for you,
Oh, my
Gemma.
God, this is the best.
It's so old. We've still got hundreds of them at home.
My
parents
are
always like coming over. I found more CDs.
This is a time capsule.
So I would sell CDs, we'd sell merch, and then nothing would happen.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is where I started to realize that, you know, music had the ability to make me feel like I was on top of the world. but then like crippling depression would follow.
Yeah, okay.
And that sort of, you know, went along for a few years. But by the time I came out of music school, I realised, no, this isn't a hobby anymore. This isn't a passion. This is now something that I need to, you know, make money from.
Yeah.
You know, that was quite a rude awakening.
Yep.
And that's probably that same story that you see in movies and you hear when the kids come home and say, I want to work in a creative environment. The parents go, oh, no. I never had any of that. My parents were so supportive of anything that I really wanted to do, as long as I was happy. And as I said, you know, my father had that affinity and we shared our music together. I'll never forget when I came home and I told my mother that I was going to go to beauty school, and she said, how superficial.
Ah!
And I have addressed that with her, and she said, James, it's not that it was superficial, it was just that I was so sad that you were giving up music.
Yeah, okay.
But it was rather serendipitous when I got a part-time job at Aesop.
Yes, this did come up in my research. So this is part-time job at Aesop while you're still studying.
Mm-hmm.
It was in 2004 that a quote-unquote facial changed your life. Talk me through it.
So I remember getting off the train at Paran Station, and this guy was getting on as I was getting off, and I knew him kind of, and he said, hey, do you want a job at Aesop? And I was like, sure. You know, give me a call. I was working part-time at Country Road. I was working part-time in an organic food store in Hawkesburn and studying. So when I rocked up to Aesop headquarters, which is a much smaller headquarters
back then than
it is now, I didn't take it very seriously. I remember being so casually dressed, and I walked into the head office and I was like, oh my God, what is this place? And Suzanne Santos greeted me and I was like, oh my God, I want to work here so badly. And her first question to me was, what's your biggest weakness?
Oof.
And I didn't have to think about it. I was like, my sensitivity.
Oh, okay.
And she was like, I love that.
Yep. Great answer.
And so when I went back for my second interview, I was all dolled up, and I remember going home being like, I have to work at Aesop. I want to work at Aesop.
Yep.
I was just so enamored by it. And so on my very first shift, they were recruiting for a new store on Toorak Road in South Yarra, where they were building also a treatment room out the back. It was the first time they were offering this service. And Maria Vovos was the facialist, and she grabbed me and she said, come on, James, jump on the bed. I want you to know what we're doing here so you can share your experiences with our customers. And I'd had many facials before, and I've been looking after my skin now for many, many years. And I got off that bed and I grabbed her hand and I just said, I want to make people feel like you've just made me feel.
Wow.
It was extraordinary. It was life-changing.
Yeah.
And so from that moment, you know, Maria and I, we developed a very close relationship, and we spoke a lot about what the opportunities could be, but she was always like, you have to go and study beauty therapy.
Right.
But I was very much like, I'm going to be a famous singer-songwriter, you know, like, cute idea, Maria, but no. It was just sitting at the back of my head.
Mm.
And then one New Year's Eve, I love a New Year's resolution, right?
Yeah, okay.
I love kind of drawing a line in the sand at that date and making some big life changes.
Nice.
Well, I did back then, very much so. And so one of them was to go to beauty school. So it all happened very quickly. I enrolled in a diploma of beauty therapy at Ellie Lucas, which a lot of people know, not just because it's a beauty school, but because Ellie herself offered like deportment lessons and all of that. So I have a lot of clients in their like 70s, and when they see the Ellie Lucas qualifications on the wall, it actually gives them they actually find it quite triggering.
Yeah,
because
okay.
You know, Ellie used to make them walk down a hallway with books on their head and that sort of stuff. So they don't do any of that sort of stuff anymore. But I was the first male to ever attend.
Really?
I was.
Okay. What year would this have been? Is this
2004? That would have been about I think I did it in 2006. I graduated,
okay.
So 2005.
Wow. Okay, that's
and I still have a lot to do with Ellie Lucas.
Yeah.
And my first question whenever I see them is: any men or any males, any non-females?
Has it changed?
There's
much?
Been maybe two or three since then.
You're joking? Okay, that really surprises me.
It really surprises me too. I have met some non-females in the industry, and they've really struggled.
Yeah, okay.
They've felt that they haven't been able to find their place in this industry.
Yeah.
They've felt a little bit of, in their own way, discriminated against.
Yeah, okay.
They've felt it difficult to find work.
Wow.
And a lot of that could be very situational. Could also say a lot about them too,
sure,
as people. I personally have never felt it,
okay,
from the perspective of employment or,
yeah,
or that it's hindered my progression, because I'm on my own journey.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been very much so. There are moments of discrimination that I do pick up on, but I'm quite pragmatic about it. I understand that this is a very, very female-dominated industry.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this industry is that it is a safe place for women.
Yes.
That it employs women, it cares for women, it champions women.
Mm.
And I love being part of it. I feel very honoured to be part of it.
Yeah.
And I don't take that for granted whatsoever. But nonetheless, I am a man, and I am always doing things that I hope are in the best interest of our industry as well.
Yeah,
so when
sure.
I open an email and I see, you know, dear ladies, I just go, oh, come on, it's 2024.
Yeah.
And then I delete it because, yeah, I'm like, well, it's not for me.
Nah, that's really interesting.
Earlier this year, I went and spoke at the ABIC conference,
yep,
about inclusivity.
Amazing.
So it's a topic that is starting to get a little bit of traction in our industry. It's absolutely time to start talking about inclusivity, not from the perspective of me being a male in the industry, but from the perspective of we are an industry that cares for people.
Yes.
And I'm sure that at a lot of people will think that means caring for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to think it. It's another thing to actually say it.
Totally.
To announce your business in that manner,
mm,
and to really be an industry or a business that is for everyone.
Yeah. Because I mean, we've all experienced walking into us, whatever space it might be in beauty, and it's sometimes there's a bit of a barrier to entry almost.
So on our front window, it says James Vivian loves skins of all colours, genders, ages, cultures and religions.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to walk into, but actually more importantly, walk out of JV and think, I don't belong there.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And you can never be a clinic for everyone.
Sure.
But you can certainly do everything you can, I believe, to be that.
Yeah,
right?
To allow for that level of comfort.
And to open up the lines of communication, mm, and to ask your clients what you need from them and what you can do to be,
yeah,
more inclusive. That is also, we do that often.
Mm.
And we learn so much from our clients or soon to be clients.
I was going to ask what it was specifically about beauty that you felt so drawn to, because it is one thing to have an amazing facial, another entirely to go, this is actually the path that I want to take my life down and make this my profession. But I think you've kind of summed it up in that what drew you to it was that feeling. You know, beauty made you feel a certain way, so you want to give that to other people, which is, again, yeah, one thing to say, like, yeah, I want to make people feel amazing, but how are you actually doing that and facilitating that is another story.
I think I loved music so much,
yeah,
that what I found quite overwhelming was when I discovered Aesop and I discovered skincare,
yeah,
that I found a matched passion. And then, mm-hmm, from that I could see a way forward out of the kind of the ups and downs of a creative,
yeah,
lifestyle.
The highest of highs and the lowest,
yeah,
of lows.
And something that really seemed to be more stable and long-lasting.
Mm.
But I tell you what it was about working for Aesop that was the most impactful,
mm,
besides the facial.
Yep.
It was the customer service.
Okay.
And I think that is, if you strip the layers back off the beauty industry, we are a customer service industry.
Totally agree.
I say that about our work. We are a customer service business first, and we know a thing or two about skin.
Yeah.
We love looking after people, giving them what they need, not what we think they need, but what they need. And that can come as a facial, that can come as a cleanser, or that can come as a really, really important conversation.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many different ways that you can express how you want to look after people.
Mm.
And that also comes back to the inclusivity story.
Totally.
As well.
I love that sentiment. Okay, so you, Diploma of Beauty Therapy at Ellie Lucas, and then you completed a Dermal Therapies degree at Victoria University. Would you still take that same path today? What advice would you give to anyone who is looking to get into the beauty industry, skin specifically?
I am where I am today because of my professional and my educational journey.
Yep.
So I wouldn't change a thing. But so much has changed from an educational standpoint since I did my dermal therapies degree. When I did my Bachelor of Dermal Therapies, a diploma beauty therapy was a prerequisite.
Sure.
And I'm so glad it was, because it's at beauty school that you learn how to touch someone.
Yeah.
It's where you learn how to care for someone. It's where you learn how to sit behind, or more importantly, beside someone and have really intimate conversations, mm-hmm. not just about their skin, but about them.
Yeah.
And it's also where I learned the value of hard work, because I went to TAFE.
Yeah.
You know, beauty is a trade.
Totally.
And I went and then did an apprenticeship at Aurora Day Spa, and, you know, you work really, really hard,
yep.
client after client. But it was on my first shift at ESOP, working up in Sydney as a qualified beauty therapist, and I'd done really intense training with Maria,
yep.
that I had my first client, and they said to me, "What are these brown things on my face?" And I was like, "I don't know," you know? So when I had made the decision to be a beauty therapist, I wanted to be a very, very good beauty
yeah.
therapist, right? I had this feeling, it's like, if someone's going to come to me versus go to the place down the road, what is going to make me the better
yeah.
choice, give a better outcome, give a better service? So that was very frustrating from day one. So I then enrolled in the Bachelor of Health Science shortly after that.
Mm.
And I lived in Sydney for about 18 months, and I flew down to Melbourne once a week to go
wow.
to uni, because it was just one day a week.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I got the best of both worlds. I had this fabulous job at ESOP, working in Sydney, making new friends, and then I'd come home and I'd see my friends and family in Melbourne, and I'd continue my studies. And that was great until I had the opportunity to go full-time and expedite it all, and I moved back to Melbourne after that. So now a lot of students go through their dermal therapies degree without a beauty therapy diploma.
Yes.
So their
yeah.
very first interaction with skin isn't sometimes until like third year university
yeah.
when they're finally put in front of some clients in the student clinic. So I struggle a little bit with that. Because
I'm so glad you're talking about this.
Okay.
I'm so glad.
So I personally struggle a little bit with that, because I believe that dermal therapies only exist because of beauty therapy. It's an extension of that.
Yeah.
So at JV, we all have a beauty therapy diploma.
Yeah.
Because
I
believe
that
makes for a very, very different dermal therapist or dermal clinician.
Yeah.
That is what we want, that is what our clients want, and that's fine. That's not what everybody wants. But I believe that it creates a very different kind of therapist.
I cannot stress enough how much I agree with that. This is my biggest, but just to sort of digress for a moment, my biggest bugbear with social media. It has kind of tapered back a bit now, but I would have people DMing me asking, this is where I'm at with my skin. What would you recommend? Firstly, I don't have a tertiary qualification in skin. I'm a journalist. I cannot recommend a single thing to you. I can tell you what's working for my skin. But secondly, even if I did have that qualification, I could have spent decades reading and reading and reading. I have never had experience with a client. That is what it comes down to. How can I recommend something to you if I have never seen your skin up close? I've never touched a client's face before. Like, there is such a disconnect. And I just feel like people think, oh, okay, yeah, I've tried this product, I've read up on this, I've interviewed this person, I am now an expert. No, I'm an educated consumer. That is as far as it'll ever go, unless I were to go and get these qualifications.
Mm. Well, good on you for saying that first and foremost, right?
Thank
because
you.
If you're not saying that, then people don't get that understanding
yeah.
and they still assume that you are that you know more than you're comfortable
yeah.
with sharing. Okay?
Totally.
But you can still be qualified and not know anything, you know.
And that's exactly right.
So much of this industry, and it's not just this industry, it's any industry if you think about it.
Yeah.
The more you do it, the better you get.
Totally.
If you have that in you, right, you can also do it for many years and not progress at all, or maybe even get worse.
Yeah.
But I often think regularly, oh, God, I'm so glad I'm doing this now. Because I couldn't do this 10 years ago.
Why is that?
I just have these moments where I just am grateful for time.
Yeah.
Where I've been able to learn something or improve.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am an intentionally modest person, and yeah. I really value that as a quality in other people. Yeah. However, if I can't champion myself as a therapist and be proud of an interaction or be proud of a client's result, then how can I actually put my money where my mouth is?
Yeah, totally.
And you can't bullshit your way through it.
You cannot.
Either anymore, or maybe you never could. But I think back to like my first day as like, you know, a very, very eager dermal therapist or even beauty therapist, and I knew nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly knew that I wanted to be good.
Yeah.
And I wanted my clients to be really, really happy.
I love that. 2010 it mm-hmm. was that you founded your first business, the Traveling Peelsman
mm-hmm.
mobile facial business. I would love to hear more about this time. How did you, I mean, at what point did you say, I'm going to start my own business? And then how did you get the word out?
So when I was doing my degree, chemistry was my favorite.
Yeah, okay.
And so not only are you learning chemistry from a sort of a compound perspective, but they're tying that in with chemical peels and exfoliation.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as I said, I'd had many, many facials before and was very interested in looking after my skin, but I had never had a chemical peel. So when we were partnering our in-clinic work with our theory work, yeah. I had my first peel and was like, oh my God, facials. What a waste of time. It's all about the peels now. You know, my skin was beautiful. It was singing. It was plump. It was juicy. I mean, I was very young then, but I could notice a real distinction.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had been given a part-time job working for Advanced Skin Technology as somewhat of a bit of a skin expert. It was probably very premature, but nonetheless an important part of the story, because they kind of just handed me this bag of peels and said, okay, well, you know, go visit these clinics and have a chat about their clients' skins. And so I would do that. I'd have a bed and I'd go around, and then I was like, I could do this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I could just replicate this bag of peels, buy myself a little table and hit up my mom and my girlfriends and see if they want a peel.
Love this.
And they did. So it started off very much as a hobby that, you know, my mum was my first client and my girlfriends were, and then they started to tell their friends about it. And so within about 6 months, I had finished my degree and I was making enough money to pay my rent
yeah.
and getting a little bit of traction.
Mm.
So I had a lot of time on my hands by this point. I'd finished school and I'd also resigned from my time at ESOP, and I had made a decision that my output was not worth what I was receiving as a paycheck.
Yeah, sure.
I'd realised that I'm a hard yeah. worker and I need more.
Yeah.
So I'm either going to be someone that has a chip on my shoulder or I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
So I start my own business. There was, a little bit of a uniqueness in what I was doing.
Yeah.
Chemical peels had a bit of a bad name, you
yeah.
know, very much that kind of Samantha Sex in the City
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, that's exactly where the mind goes.
That was still very, very top of mind for a lot of people.
Still is, I find.
It still is. I think we've broken down those barriers.
Yeah, thank God for
that. Which is so great. And also chemical peels by nature are becoming so much more gentle mm. and, you know, there's been a bit of a 180 shift in terms of being super, super aggressive for the sake of being aggressive and more of a slow and steady approach.
Yeah.
Of which peels are a good example of that. I was a male in the industry.
Yeah.
And I was mobile. So that got quite a bit of traction from a PR perspective.
Yeah, okay.
I got some really great write-ups.
Yeah.
Which would have a huge effect on bookings.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'd worked up in Sydney and lived up in Sydney, I had a lot of clients that were very eager to have me to continue to look after them.
Yeah.
So I actually really started the Travelling Peelsman in Sydney, even though I lived in Melbourne, because
right.
I had a bigger pool of clients waiting up there and also therefore access to beauty journos up there. So
yeah.
they'd asked me to come and visit them, and it was a lot of fun. It was a beautiful way to grow a business very, very organically, without a lot of pressure,
yeah.
very low overheads, and to slowly just work on my craft.
Love it. Okay, well, on that, any lessons that you picked up during that time that you find you're still applying to your work today?
So someone I saw on a forum recently, someone wrote, hi, everyone, I'm coming up to my second year in business and I'd really like to set some goals for myself. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any suggestions? And I often don't comment on these things.
Yeah.
I kind of sometimes think it's a bit of a waste of time, right? Because it's just, it's not really conversational. And yeah. You don't know if how your feedback's going to be taken. But I said, look, if I can give you a little bit of advice, the first thing is don't ask anyone for what your goals should be. The only person that can come from, the only person that can come from is you. Mm-hmm. But if I think back to my second year in business, when I didn't have a lot of clients, all I did was give 110% to every single person that wanted me to come to their house or wanted an appointment with me. And so that was my main goal and that seemed to have served me quite well. So if I think back to then, it was the customer service. It was going above and beyond. I would drive to their home. I'd set up a little mock clinic. I would do their treatment. If they wanted skincare, I would drive because I didn't hold any stock. I would drive to Keysborough and I'd go and pick up the products and I'd drive back to their home and drop them off.
Wow.
I had the time, but also this was just how – it was the only way that I really knew how to do it. I'll check in with them the next day. I check in with them a week later. You know, I really had this strong desire to always know what their skin was doing. You know, it didn't seem suitable for me to go to their house, slap a peel on their face and then go see you in 4 weeks' time. If I've done something, I want to know, did I hit the mark? Are they happy with their skin? Has that improved their acne? Is their congestion lessening? The only way to know that is by asking. So I kind of set this standard or I set in place a kind of a philosophy where it was actually not just about the treatment itself, it was about what happened around the treatment. And all of that still goes on 15 years later.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so how long were you doing this for before you set up shop in Windsor?
I think for memory it was about 18 months.
Wow, okay, that's quick to be able to, you know, move in somewhere more permanent.
There were two main reasons. The first was that there was a lot of travel time going on by this point.
Of course.
Because I was travelling all over Melbourne and Sydney too. And that was actually hindering people being able to book in.
Right.
Because I'd have to allocate this travel time throughout the day.
Yeah.
So that was always frustrating because, you know, a big goal of mine is to really help as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing was whilst I was growing my bag of peels, there's only so much you can do with a peel.
Yes.
And I had this education and experience working with other modalities that were going to help my clients with concerns that they had. So I felt the need to be able to offer them those services.
Yeah.
As a therapist, I've always been very, very – I've always thought it was very, very important to be able to let a client know what you can do versus what you can't do.
Yeah.
And so as the travelling peelsman, I could say, you know, I can address A, B and C, but D, E and F, you'll need to go to X laser clinic or Y laser clinic.
Yeah.
And I'd always be like, oh, I wish I was doing that myself. So – although it was not a strategy to build a clientele in this mobile context and then move that into a clinic, but I'll never forget that first day when I'd set up my clinic space and I'd bought my laser and I had a steady stream of people walking through the door. I was like, oh, my God, James, like, well done. Imagine if you didn't have these clients. You'd be sitting here with your laser going, where is everyone? So, yeah, that was not intentional, but very well received.
I would love to hear about how you physically grew the first James Vivian Clinic. How did you gauge when it was the right time to hire? I feel like that's a wall that a lot of people come up against. And do you have any advice on growing a team and, I guess, choosing the right people?
Well, employment is so tricky.
Yeah.
And it was particularly tricky back then. But it is now no longer tricky.
Okay.
And I think that is because we have a standard.
Yeah.
We have a benchmark. And employment is such a steep learning curve and you learn something each and every time you bring someone new into your business. But and it can be very stressful and bring around a lot of anxiety, but I don't let that happen anymore. So we now have a team of 8 therapists who set the standard.
Yeah.
Right? But back then, when it came to employment, I knew who I was as a therapist, and I knew that I was a different kind of therapist.
Yeah.
One, because I've always been unique and I pride myself on that, but also because your clients tell you,
yes,
right, that, you know, you're not an average dermal clinician. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm fully aware of that. Okay. So I've always known that it's part craft and very much part personality.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm weird, I need weird people around me, okay?
Uh-huh.
And we celebrate that too at JV. I mean, everyone always just says, oh, my God, we're so crazy. We're so wild. And they are. They are, because we're building these relationships with people. And often, yes, of course, it's steeped in skin, but it's often got sometimes nothing to do with skin.
Right.
You know, these interactions you have with people where they tell you all sorts of extraordinary things and they leave and you think, oh, God, I should pay you for that interaction. And so people need to be able to give an amazing treatment but also give amazing conversation,
yeah,
as well. I've kind of always believed in build it and they will come, right?
Yep.
So I've been very, very lucky. My business has always been moving in an upwards trajectory.
Yeah.
Very slowly in the very beginning, but sure. I could see, okay, we've got something here. You know, people are coming and people want their parents and their family and their friends to come. I can't look after them, so I'll find someone to look after them.
Yeah.
Right? And so that would, Hayley was my first therapist. She still works for me.
Wow.
So like coming up to 10 years, she has left to have a baby. But, wow, you know, Hayley didn't start as a full-time therapist. She started off part-time. And after we moved from our single room, which we shared with a plastic surgeon on the avenue, we moved into our own space on High Street in Prahran, and we were there, yep, for 7 years, and that was just a two-room clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hayley started off in – I was in one of the rooms, and then Hayley started off in another, and then she grew her clientele, and then more people wanted to come. So we started to pepper that second room with more part-time dermal, yeah, clinicians, a lot of mothers with children. So by the time we left High Street Prahran, there was 3 therapists sharing that one room. We had always grown very, very slowly,
yeah,
over that period of time, which I didn't necessarily have any control over. It's just how it happened,
yeah,
right? But I love that. But that all changed with COVID.
Yeah, okay. How long had you been in business for pre-COVID?
So 7 years, 2 years, about 10 years.
Yeah, okay. Yep. And then, I mean, what was that time like?
Oh, God, we could do a whole podcast,
yeah,
on,
bonus
on that. But look, top line is we are a COVID success story.
Yeah,
very much so. I often believe that growth is exponential.
Yeah.
So I think what was happening over COVID is that more people were tuning into us.
Yeah, for
sure. Because of the power of social media, mm, and because of the impact social media has on our industry, more people were tuning in. So therefore, all of a sudden, more people wanted to come,
yeah,
to,
okay,
us. So we would close our doors. Obviously, we are predominantly a face-to-face industry. Mm. We can't do our work without touching the skin. That was taken away from us. I didn't have any family to look after. I just had my business, my clients, and a lot of time on my hands. Mm. So I just did everything I could to stay in touch with them and move my conversations about skin, which was always one-on-one,
yeah,
into an environment that now maybe 5 people were listening to,
yeah,
or then 10 or 20, mm, and, you know, it grew from there. And just offering the same, as a lot of people have told me since, you know, like my no BS approach,
yeah,
tell it like it is. I don't need to be the smartest person in the room. I don't need to be the smartest person on social media. I just need you to understand what it is that I'm trying to tell you,
yeah,
about your skin or about the condition of your skin. So lots of time for that. And prior to COVID, you know, I'd do a couple of funny videos here and there. We'd post a post once or twice a week.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden we were posting daily and I could see that there was a direct correlation between putting some effort into social media and getting something out of it.
Mm.
So we were talking to people all over Australia, sometimes as far as Asia, wow. about their skin and sending them out products and, you know, in the same way I said before, staying in touch with them, making sure mm. that home care is working and helping them through their own kind of COVID journey.
Mm.
Which was either impacting their skin negatively or they had time to focus on their skin or a desire to now focus on their skin. And then we come out of a lockdown and they would become a client.
Yeah.
Also, with the writing very much being on the wall about us getting busier, it also allowed us to, you know, in the same way I said before, build it and they will come, employ more therapists.
Yeah, okay.
Lease the rooms next door, yeah. build some more treatment rooms, buy new equipment. It just yeah. always seemed like the right thing to do slash something to do
mm.
over this very quiet period. So we came out of COVID three times bigger than we were when we moved in.
Wow.
Into a new premises with new rooms, with a much bigger team.
Incredible.
It was overwhelming for a very, sure. very long time because we grew with our doors closed.
Mm.
It's yeah, easy it's to so grow with no one around.
Right.
With no clients coming in, with no staff around. But the minute things would fire up again, it was like, what the hell is going on
yeah.
here? So that definitely took its toll on me psychologically because all of a sudden business was better than it ever had been. Not that it was mm. bad before, but it was like, it was incredible.
Yeah.
We were helping so many people with so many people moving through our doors daily, so many amazing staff doing yeah. brilliant work. And I just didn't want to be anywhere near it.
Interesting. Overwhelm?
I think overwhelm, I think PTSD from
yeah, that tracks.
Because at no point was I stopping. I yeah. was just going, trying to do everything I could to keep the trains on the track.
Yeah.
But what I think I had underestimated was now the administrational support mm. needed to run a business.
Oh, my God, of course.
That we had now.
Yeah.
So beforehand we had Tash who did a brilliant job. I think she did maybe like 20 hours a week. She'd come in, she'd do a little bit of admin, do a little bit of appointment book stuff and she'd nick off. We didn't now know who or how many people we needed to support all the
yeah.
work that the staff were doing and the demands of clients. And it was very and clients were different post-COVID.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There was that initial wave where people would do anything to get an appointment.
Yep. Yeah.
Beg, borrow, steal, kill, like whatever.
Yep.
And then it sort of moved to people being like, do you know what? I'm still very interested in my skin, but I'm also interested in many, many other things now. And so priorities shifted and there was so much movement and all
yeah,
of that,
okay.
which just required a lot of work to make sure that everyone could always be where they needed to be. That was that's a challenge and that's something that we also do quite well as
yeah.
well, you know, because the customer service extends to all of that. Mm. And then, as I said, it also allowed for other great opportunities to come about as well.
Yes. Stunning segue because I, of course, want to talk about Viviology. You launched your own skincare line in 2022 alongside Adore Beauty, which we will get to. But at what point did you initially start to think about creating your own skincare line? Were you looking at the existing market and thinking, okay, there's a gap here and I can fill it?
So before the conversation about Viviology started, yep. I'd actually been working on a skincare range with my friend Elise Tran.
Yes.
And
God, love her.
And where I saw a gap was in simple, inexpensive skincare.
Yeah.
Right? Like I have this theory, the last thing this world needs is another expensive skincare range.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you often do get what you pay for.
Sure.
But you often don't get what you pay for. Okay.
Yes.
So if you're going to
align. Two things can be true at once.
So if you're going to align yourself with an expensive premium product, it just better work.
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't always have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be exhaustive. So Elise and I were working on this 3 SKU range of skincare and we were getting absolutely nowhere. You know, two quite capable people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Getting nowhere.
Interesting.
We had a beautiful rendering of packaging that we were told couldn't be filled standing up.
Oh, my God.
You know, we just kept getting roadblocks. And so when Kate Morris offered me the opportunity to be the face or the skin of their first in-house cosmeceutical range, I had to talk to Alice straight away and say, look, I've been given this opportunity. And she said very graciously, you got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So COVID allowed us, although we could never really be in a room together, COVID allowed us to create a brand new cosmeceutical range of skincare and launch it shortly after.
Could you share a bit more about what the Adore Beauty Incubator actually means? Mm. Obviously, it's a standalone skincare line, but how did that collaboration kind of come about?
So Kate Morris is a client of ours at JV, right. And you know, you can imagine the sorts of conversations that we'd be having in the treatment room.
To be a fly on the wall.
And Kate very much shared my feelings around skincare being overwhelming, exhaustive, expensive, and an opportunity to do it in not just a different way but in a fun way.
Yeah.
And I think that that is one of the reasons why she was drawn to me, but also one of the reasons why I was drawn to her and Adore Beauty, because they have a lot of fun there.
Yes.
And they are very inclusive, and the fact that they wanted to work with me and gave me a lot of free rein, particularly from a creative perspective, to create something that was unique and that stood out. Yeah. And, you know, in the same way that I work hard to do that, that is something that I think that has created a really nice relationship between the two of us. And, yeah.
You launched with 6 products. How did you decide which products you were going to launch with?
So very much a collaboration. You know, one of the great things about working with Adore Beauty is that there is a lot of data.
Yeah.
There, right? They've got a lot of customers that they can lean on in terms of working out exactly what their preferences are, what they're enjoying using. But, you know, we had some very key pillars with Viviology. Mm-hmm. And some of those are to be gender neutral.
Yeah.
To be very inclusive. To be simple to use, to be dermal therapist led, from the perspective of being very, very educational.
Yeah.
You know, to not just put something out there and be like, good luck, guys, you're on your own. To really be able to explain it and to be able to create more of an experience and more of a community of people, of Viviologists.
Love.
Who are just as passionate about their skin, maybe even more passionate about their skin than we are, and to be able to help them through. In the same way I said before, to also allow them to know exactly what they can expect out of Viviology or what they can't expect from Viviology. It's important that consumers can hopefully expect what sort of outcome they can get prior to a purchase.
Yeah.
That said, it's very tricky because skins will do all sorts of things when you least expect it. And when you've, you know, one of the greatest challenges with skincare purchasing online or in store is that people don't know what their skin truly needs, right? And so you're trying to arm them with information and some skill to make them their own little dermal therapist in the bathroom so that if something is going well, to celebrate that, but if it's not going well, to also have the intuition to go, okay, something's not right here.
Yeah.
To create also a bit of a two-way communication through Instagram or through the Adore Beauty Custom Service channel. If something's not right, reach out. So that we can either help, or we can ideally help correct that before sometimes things get worse.
Yeah.
So with that philosophy of wanting it to be really simple, like you got to have your basics.
Yes.
You can't have a skincare routine without a cleanser, moisturizer, and a sunscreen.
Yes.
So they're no-brainers. We tried to create as universal a product as possible with those. You can't say it's for everyone, but pretty much everyone could give them a crack.
Yeah.
And then we wanted our exfoliant, no-brainer, essential.
Yes.
And then our ABC. And look, A plus B plus C can equal clear, healthy skin. So we've just gone with those, and they were a really, really great place for people to start, whether or not – and that was a great place for people to start with Viviology, whether or not they were seasoned skincare users, because they could if they wanted to transition across and get a great outcome, or if they were skincare newbies, you could also use Viviology and have a nice experience and just go slow and maybe get to the full range eventually if you wanted to, or just dip your toe in.
Love it. You have since added a few more products to the range. How does that product development process work for you? Have you always been thinking about what might come next, or have you been working off what your customers are asking for?
One of the great things about Viviology is that I'm all care, no responsibility.
Love.
I hope it's okay to say this. Like, I'm very actively involved in all facets of Viviology.
Yeah.
If anything, I'd like to be more involved. But it takes so much work to get a skincare range, not just up and running, but to have it perpetuate because there is, you know, We are one of many, okay? And we're not necessarily that different to anything else. However, we have a point of view and we have a point of difference. And it takes a while for people to discover that.
Yeah.
So kind of whilst creating Viviology was a big challenge and something we took very, very seriously, it's almost like that's the easy part.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens next. That is the tricky part. People finding you, people falling in love with you, people trusting you, right?
Yeah.
And people going on that journey with you. So when it comes to new product development, one of the great things about me having the clinic is that what our clients need at JV often informs where to from here with Viviology.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I said before I'm all care, no responsibility, I can come up with an idea. But I don't actually have to do all the grunt work to make it happen. It's pretty amazing. But it doesn't mean I'm not doing anything. I'm just busy doing other stuff.
Yes.
You know, and then there's designated people at a door that help to make it happen. So again, we collaborate with what our clients are needing at JV, the feedback we're getting from our Viviologists, plus the data at a door.
Data. Love it. You mentioned that you're one of many. How have you gone about converting new customers? Obviously, you know, very helpful and a beautiful thing to be on a door, but one of many. So how have you gone about bringing new consumers into the fold?
So being on a door is amazing because I think as a community or a part of their community is that they are very skin-focused, very budget focused,
yes.
Right? And but don't suffer fools. So, hello Viviology, right?
Yeah.
It's been such a great. We've had so much great feedback from customers that are finding it and repurchasing, and you know, really embracing many of our key philosophies. And that is something that, as I said before, it takes time, okay, because a lot of people are already loving what they're using. And I often say to people, like, that's the hardest part. Like, finding what your skin loves is so tricky. So if you find it, like, don't change it. Like, just stay there unless your skin changes. I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, my skin needs a change from time to time. No, it doesn't. It's not fickle. It's not sick of what you're using. Either you're sick of what you're using or your skin's changed.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to always give the skin what it needs based on what it's telling you it needs. And if you don't know what it needs, go and see a specialist.
Yes.
But if you've got a handle of it on it, perfect. Don't make it any more difficult for yourself, because finding the right products for you is so hard already.
Yeah.
At James Vivian, we sell Viviology by the truckload because our clients love it. They love being able to now pepper their skincare routine with a less expensive cleanser, a moisturizer that they love, that they can replenish much more regularly than they would before their $270 moisturizer. You know, people often save things up and I'm like, it doesn't work in the bottle.
Nope.
Okay. It's also helped bring us a younger clientele as well.
Okay.
That are understanding that skincare does only take you so far. So they're peppering their skincare routine at home with a seasonal treatment perhaps, yes, or a little express visit here and there. It's been great for teens.
Yes.
Again, because it just seems, I think, to parents like, okay, this is a brand I can trust, but it's a brand that also I'm not having to A, spend too much on, but also starting to perpetuate this idea that my children have to invest a lot in skincare as well. And so time, it's just taking time to find, for people to find us.
Mm.
It's organic and I love it.
The range has been described as everything you need, nothing you don't. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you think people typically make with their skincare routines?
Definitely doing too much.
Yeah, overcomplicating things.
Doing either too much to their skin and not picking up on the fact that it's saying, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thinking that, you know, the more you do, the better the outcome will be. And we just know that that is not true. But also thinking that stronger is better, which unfortunately is not true either. Skincare should be a pleasure, should be a joy to use as the person performing the routine at home, but your skin should be looking and feeling better when you apply it.
Yeah.
There are some products out there that can sting a little bit.
Sure.
And that's okay to use from time to time. And ideally it says on the box, this may sting, or the person that's given it to you has pre-warned you. But if your skincare is stinging, burning, the face is hot, red, irritated, that's your skin saying, please stop, I don't like this. Just like it would if you had a sore ankle, right? You'd rest it.
Yeah. There was a period where people thought, oh my God, if my skin feels like it's entered the seventh circle of hell, oh, it's working. No. No. Not necessarily.
Hey, I did that too. I used to scrub.
Oh, we all did.
The living daylights out of my face with the Aesop tea tree leaf facial exfoliant, and I wouldn't stop until I was as red as a tomato.
Yeah, I would scrub and then pour an AHA all over me and
face
go,
mask
perfect.
Over the top.
Yeah.
In the treatment room, that's okay. Like, that's when you go red and hot and burny and zingy under the protection of a qualified, ideally, therapist. Your home care supports all of that. But I understand I live in this world where we're encouraging people to go in and see a therapist, and that it is easier when you do have a specialist overseeing your skin because we've all got our skills and our attributes, and it's not always a good understanding of skin.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of but that's the minority. The majority of people are at home caring for their skin, so they're trying to get the best out of their skincare as possible, and that's where the challenge is, right?
Mm. You have been a part of the beauty industry for a good 14 or so years now. Over the
20.
20, oh my God, of course, that's wild. Over the last few years, what have been some of the biggest changes that you've seen within the industry? You've been a business owner for 14 years. That's crazy.
So I have this feeling that whilst it seems like our industry moves very, very quickly, I kind of feel like it doesn't.
Okay.
I think a lot of the things that come to light are repackaged, reformulated with a new buzzword, a laser that has now found another usage in the skin in terms of what it can target. So whilst it does seem to move very quickly, I try to stay very level-headed about it, okay? Mm-hmm. I embrace change very, very much so, and our clients embrace change very much so, but you've just got to make sure that any change is worthwhile, and there is so much new stuff coming out all the time.
Yeah.
I can often just be like, nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. That will disappear in 6 months. That'll disappear in 12 months. And it often does. But it's when things have staying power, that's when I start tuning into it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's look into that now. Or you get enough clients, because our clients aren't guinea pigs.
No.
But they can be elsewhere. And so you get enough clients walking through the door being like, hey, so let's use Profilo, for example, right?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So Profilo, as soon as I heard about it, I was like, this is going to be subtle. But we had clients come and be like, oh, I'm having Profhilo. It's going to be, you know, amazing. And I'd say, look, just don't expect too much from it. And so they'd go and they'd have their three sessions and then they'd come back in and they'd be like, you're right, like it doesn't really look like I've had anything done. And so what was happening was practitioners that were offering it were getting very excited about this thing that wasn't going to function like a filler, so therefore wasn't going to make the face look like it was overly filled, but was still going to be impactful. Mm. They hadn't performed the treatment yet. They hadn't given it 6 months or 12 months to watch how everyone else was doing it. And then they would say to their clients, yeah, you're right, like it kind of hasn't done very much.
Yeah.
Some clients do love it because of its subtlety, mm-hmm. and that's great, so maybe a little bit more preventative, but a lot of more mature clients were expecting far too much from it,
sure.
and the operators were expecting far too much from it.
God,
so there's something in wait. There's something in waiting,
yeah,
definitely. And even if you're not going to offer it yourself, being able to just have a well-rounded opinion of what you think to share that with your customers or clients. So on the conversation of injectables, I think that there's definitely been a move away from overly filled faces and frozen faces and people not using that as the gateway of skincare or facial rejuvenation.
Yeah.
There's been the move back to skin first, which is what we've always been championing at James Vivian or as the wider dermal industry. That's what we champion.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to have now more clients resonating with that message as well, because yes, you can go and stick some anti-wrinkle injections on in your forehead, or you can go and plump up your lips, but if your skin's not functioning as well as you would like it to, then it often accentuates all of that.
Totally.
And so one of the things I love about our clients at JV is that we don't offer these we don't offer any injectable treatments, so we get to have these very honest, in-depth conversations about our thoughts around it or what's available with no vested interest in it. Not being like, hey, yeah, you could do some of that. We'll send you down the hallway. Because we have a lot of clients that come to us because they don't want to have those sorts of treatments. Or they're coming to us before they think that they want to start those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So we get to improve the look and the function and the feel of the skin. So even if they were coming through being like, look, I think I might get a little bit of anti-wrinkle injection, but I'm really uncomfortable at the thought of it, we say, let's just spend a bit of time working on your skin, and then they will often come back and say, I'm thrilled.
Mm.
I don't feel like I need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that long enough now to be able to share that with someone. Look, let's just do some treatments and then let's make a call as to whether you want to do that or not. Yeah. You're probably not going to want to.
I love that approach.
But I personally, and as most clinicians at JV would attest, we do love best of both worlds because we, as I said, we know what we can do. As dermal clinicians, we manipulate a certain aspect of the skin.
Yeah.
And the anti-wrinkle injections work at another level, and dermal fillers work at another level, and nootropic and, you know, supplements work at a different level, and exercise works at a different level. And, you know, it's all very much part of a holistic story.
All of that in mind, what changes do you think we can expect to see from the beauty industry over the next few years?
I think a further movement towards skin health and natural beauty and being an industry that champions aging and creates a safe space for people to dip in and out of very positively, because there's so much negativity in this industry, right? You know, in an effort to make people feel better about themselves, there's a lot of people, and I'm sure that I'm guilty of this, not intentionally, but where we actually make people feel worse.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a lot of power as dermal clinicians. We have a lot of power as therapists. Social media gives us a lot of power to impact people very positively or negatively.
Mm.
So we've got to make sure that the language we're using and how we're addressing people is staying in that very positive mindset.
Yeah.
There's a lot of movement from a regulation standpoint that is not so much affecting us as dermal clinicians or therapists, but more so with cosmetic injectors and doctors in the way that they can advertise.
Mm-hmm.
there's a lot of stress and anxiety going along behind the scenes with that, but I do think that it's all for the best.
Yeah.
It is really putting the customer and the client first and foremost. Mm. We are here to facilitate their skin hopes and dreams, okay? Mm. Yes, we're businesses and we need to, you know, we also need to support ourselves. We have to remember why we're here, and that is for them.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing just, you know, less name calling, I'm really looking forward to more of us being an industry that is just much more warm and welcoming for everyone, mm-hmm. no matter their gender, their age, their colour, their ability. It's happening. Mm. It really is. And I love being part of that change. And it's resonating well, I think, with clients and consumers already. Does that make sense?
It does. That's perfect. Okay. It's so perfect. James, my final question.
Mm-hmm.
What is next for Viviology?
So we get a lot of interest from other clinics about stocking Viviology.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me.
And from an infrastructure point of view, it's been really, really difficult.
Yep.
Because, you know, Adore Beauty is its own beast in, you know, it's very, very B2C.
Yep.
So we've been working behind the scenes to create more of a B2B opportunity, and that will be launching soon, which I'm really excited about because that allows me to help further spread the kind of Viviology word and, you know, talk to other therapists about how they can impact their clients' skin journey in that kind of Viviology way, which is very much skin-led, but it's also about having a bit of fun and bringing a bit of colour into it as well. Because one of the things I love about this industry is that there's so many amazing clinics and therapists out there doing exceptional work, and everyone does skincare very, very differently. And that means that there is ideally, and I hope that anyone listening to this agrees, and if you don't, please reach out to me, is that there is something out there for everyone.
Mm.
You know, a therapist that gets you or a therapist that is going to be able to point you in the right direction if they can't do it, of where to go from here. And if you're someone that likes something very clinical, because that's a lot of clinics vibe, you know, you can go there, you can be out in 15 minutes and that's fabulous. Or if you're someone that wants to, you know, really just kind of like get under a snuggly blanket and be really, really pampered and still walk out glowing, there's something out there for you. And that's one of the things that I've loved about social media, is about meeting all of these other kind of skincare weirdos and, you know, building this little community. It's been wonderful.
That was James Vivian, founder of Viviology, which you can find on Instagram at Viviology Skin. To read more, you can visit glowjournal.com, and for more beauty news, you can find me on Instagram at gemdiamond or at glow.journal. If you liked this episode, please do not forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share so other beauty and business lovers can find us. I'm Gemma Diamond. You've been listening to the Glow Journal podcast, and thank you for joining me. The Glow Journal podcast would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people, the traditional custodians of the land upon which this podcast is produced. We pay our respects to elders past and present.